Chapter 14. 2220 GMT. Soup, Houston, Almerich, Jim Boyd here. Speaking to the world, I guess. Thank you to everybody who cares enough to listen in. And love to you, Wu Shi. I am Jim Boyd. This is my own damn fault. I want to say that from the get-go, not the fault of the ground controllers. And we are out of sync by long minutes, as you know. But I should have waited for advice, and certainly not the fault of my crew, Ito and Marina, who, one way or another, are going to suffer even more because of what I did. What I did. My choice. My error. I've already downloaded a technical report, and the crew will download more as the events unfold. But I want to say this in my own words, if I can. As long as I can. Okay, look. Here it is. You know already that when the sun was eclipsed, or whatever has happened, we lost our primary source of power. Sunlight on our big solar cell arrays. And we also, incidentally, lost the grip of the sun's gravity on us, and we started drifting off course straight away. Those, you could say, remain our principal issues. And you'll know by now, too, that among our survival options, we do have battery backup power. And we do have a storm shelter. A small cabin within a cabin where we can retreat. The batteries, though, are a finite resource. They are Russian-built and a damn fine product. But they have limited capacities. They are designed for an outage of 8 hours. They are said to be comfortably capable of lasting 12 hours, without recharge. Longer than that, it's tricky, but the mission designers have tried out catastrophe scenario rig-ups, where they can be made to last more than 24 hours. Last, meaning keeping a crew alive while holding back enough juice for a restart when the power supply is restored. But to do that, long before the first 12 hours are gone, you have to retreat to the storm shelter, which has got a lot of thermal insulation, and it's recommended you put on pressure suit layers to keep in the warmth. And, well, you just hunker down in your little high-tech igloo while the batteries dribble in the power, and you save all your body heat and play poker until the cavalry arrives, okay? While the main cabin just freezes. So, after the first half hour or so, as we started to realise this situation wasn't going to be resolved anytime soon, we started working through those survival protocols. We stowed our key consumables in the store shelter, along with the pressure suits and other bits of clothing. A lot of that stuff was in there already. It's a kind of handy cupboard when not in use. That didn't take long. We were ready. And, under soup orders, we all started spending most of our time in the shelter from the start. But at the same time, we were handling the second of our issues, which is that drift, of course. I spoke about this before. We were concerned about measuring that drift. With the loss of data from the sun sensor, we were worried about the stability of the basic position-finding algorithms. And though the other automated position trackers kept working for now, our star sensors, the inertial tracker and such, we couldn't be sure how long that would last. Because as the power levels drop, the systems automatically shut themselves down, one by one. So Soup asked us to start making manual observations of the stars, with the little sextants we always carry, as long as we could, even before the automated sensors packed up. Because the more checks we made, the better handle they would have on our position. Fine, good. We kept at our jobs. I think we found making the star sightings comforting. Something we could actually do. 10 hours passed. By then we had everything inside the storm shelter, but were still moving around. 11 hours. By then we were going out one at a time, just to stay economical. Making our position reports, calling them in, 11 hours 30. Okay, and here is where it went wrong. And I ain't blaming anybody, mostly myself. But even me, not so much. I think a combination of factors worked against us. We knew the 12-hour lockdown deadline was coming, but we thought we had half an hour, plenty of time. So solely on my own initiative, I decided to dash out of the storm shelter one last time, for one final position reading. So there I was, alone in the habitat's main area, in my long johns, inside the shelter we were putting on our pressure suits at the time, when the power started to cut down seriously. I heard the hum of the air conditioning fans stop, the water pumps slowing, the main lights flickered, and the low-power LED emergency lamps came on. Long, deep shadows everywhere. And then I heard a deeper hum, fading. I think that was the gyrodynes, the big flywheels we use to help maintain attitude. It's amazing how noisy a space habitat is, normally. And now I was hearing it grow quiet for the first time since we left Mars orbit, I guess, all those months ago. I was slow, I admit it. I was listening to it all, trying to figure out what was happening, where we were in the sequence. I don't think I've experienced that kind of power down before. We never simulated it. I was slow, unforgivably so, to figure out what was going on. Then I heard the door slam, the door of the storm shelter. And I heard it click, locked. I saw their faces at the window, Ito, Marina, their palms as they slammed at the door. As I said, it's nobody's fault, certainly not the manufacturer's. But I think maybe there is an interfacing issue with the Habitat, a Jones Inc. product, mostly Californian built, and the storm shelter, which is itself a smart gadget but built in Russia. And I think maybe the batteries, draining, gave out a dip in the output, in the overall decline. The shelter detected that fairly abrupt drop in power levels and interpreted it as some catastrophic failure and did what it was supposed to do, which was to slam its door shut to protect the crew within. Memo to Soup and Jones Inc. Do some more integration testing before you send up another long-duration shelter habitat mission. Anyhow, you can bet that storm shelter door won't open again. Only if the main power comes back, miraculously. There's no manual override, if you're thinking of that option. The Russians don't do manual overrides. Yuri Gagarin could have told you that. So here you have this ridiculous situation of my crew safe and snug in a shelter that won't open, and me drifting around in a virtually powerless HAB module, with not a sunbeam to warm my face. In my underwear, literally, having got myself shut out. I have to tell you that Marina already figured that without power, the temperature in here is going to drop fast. Several degrees an hour. So it's going to get pretty cold in, well, you can do the math. I'm hoping this whole dumb situation will be resolved before then. Soup are talking to manufacturers, I know that. In the meantime, since you ask, I'm going to keep busy. I'll make notes of the battery's power output and on the behaviour of other systems as their power share falls below nominal. All of this will be of use to future contingency planning. This is what we do. We record and we learn so we can help the next guy. Oh, and I will keep on sighting the stars, since it was our one last attempt to do so that has stranded me out here. And with the information that gives, I hope we will eventually be able to bring the Almirik home safe, with all its crew, because I ain't dead yet. Soup, this is Jim Boyd, signing off. No, not yet. I have more to say. Look, however this turns out, I can't regret it. Nobody said getting to Mars and back would be easy or safe. They did tell me how wonderful it would be, and so it was. You'll have seen our science reports, or the summaries. We landed on the Medusae Fossae Formation, 1,000,000 square kilometres of pumice, hugely ancient, a raft of debris from a long-dead volcano, which had itself formed beneath an equally vanished sea. We proved that was what the formation had to be, as if we had discovered that antique ocean. But Mars is more than the science. Mars is Mars. Just to see these landscapes we had all peered at for so long, through camera images returned by those clumsy, brave little rovers. It had been like looking at a wonderful land through a pinhole. When you're there, when you're down on the surface, Mars is huge. It doesn't feel like some small world at all. That tremendous sky, the shrunken sun. The light is low, and you have this twilight feel, the soft brown of sky and land. And the huge features, the cliffs, the canyons, the craters, all so still, so silent. The track marks from some of those antique rovers have lasted decades. The rovers themselves are still there. You can find them, as if waiting for a call from their distant makers. I don't regret any of it. How could I? I just wish you could have been with me, she. Oh, and please don't dock my pay over this. I know that's the Russian way. Or the crew's pay. She, I love you.